In chapter 7, he's made 6 points in that chapter. And they're good practical points that would apply to us today. And in that wisdom, I'm going to summarize the first four, which are going over last class. Then we'll finish those last two today. But in the first one, it says wisdom for times of death. You know, there's the points Solomon made in this is that there's an end to every person. And he shows that to us when he references a house of mourning. Death for every person would be that everyone would understand that in their life, especially in the prime of their life, that they live a life maybe to extremes, but in the end there'll be a reckoning. And there is value in going to a house of mourning. There is value in that. Again, to remind us that we have a short life here, as Wally referenced in his prayer. In the second one, wisdom for times of rebuke. You know, these are times when people have go through a system of correction, Christian of good advice. And sometimes that hurts us somewhat. But if we sit back and analyze it, you know, and talk it over with that individual or in the reading that we've done, that benefits us in this life. And when you're told to improve your character for good works, remember, a good character will save you, will serve you all your life. And there's in that brief section there in the second item in chapter 7, he talks about that good character, again, will serve you all your life, as opposed to great times of enjoyment, I guess you'd say, great times of festivities, which are very short-lived. So a good character would follow through, okay, in times of those, times of mourning and times of enjoyment. So good times of that. So rebuke is good. And number three, there's a wisdom for times of oppression and bribery. From time to time, we see ourselves in situations like that where we think we're oppressed. We think we've got a raw deal. And what do we do? Okay, and in this wisdom here, he says, when you are told how to improve your character, when you are mistreated by oppression or bribery, don't be angry, because that will distort you in your reaction to that bribery or oppression, and for that again can corrupt your heart. And that's how a fool acts. That's how a fool acts. So we'll have mistreatment in life. How do we react to it? Do we want retribution? Do we get angry? And you get angry, you lose self-control, don't you? And a believer doesn't want to lose that. So there's some good wisdom for us when you come to those times of mistreatment and oppression. And the fourth one we went over in last class was wisdom for times of prosperity and poverty. And Solomon and God wants us to remember at this time that prosperity is a defense against oppression and adversity, and that is good. And that is good. Be happy about that. But always remember that God's providence is always present. We can have times of prosperity. We have times of poverty. But enjoy that while you have it, while it's in your control. And then when poverty comes or adversity comes, understand too that that's God's providence. And you need to, again, maintain a heart through that of self-control. And don't get angry at those oppressors. Angry to the part of retribution. So that's those first four parts when you deal with that. Now, in the last two in this chapter 7, begins in verse 15. And we briefly touched on that last time. But sometimes in life, Solomon tells us that things are out of order. Things are, I guess you would not use these days, but we're topsy-turvy. And maybe that could confuse us. Maybe it says, well, something's not right. But again, that's life under the sun. Things have a disorder to them. I was trying to think of an illustration on that. If you're going to buy a house, people buy houses remotely now. They've seen pictures of it. Well, you can buy a house that way. People buy it that way. But isn't it the standard way is what? To visit a house, isn't it? See, and walk around the yard and look at things and check for foundation and maybe some research. So that's maybe an illustration of a topsy-turvy event that may happen in one's life. And that applies to land that you may buy. It may be to things that you buy on the internet, okay? Maybe you can think of other things, but sometimes life is that way. And you know what? That's just how things happen sometimes. Things in life are just out of order. Things are topsy-turvy. And so Solomon deals with that here, beginning in verse 15. I have seen everything during my lifetime of futility. Of course, that in my lifetime, you know, if you just started your life and just started being exposed to these things, yes, but I think this may be a reference to him being an older man. And I think we've seen that in other verses also. That he's looking back on the wisdom and exposure to people's lives, the things that he's executed, okay? He's commanded to be done during his reign as king of Israel. And I've seen everything in my lifetime of futility. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness. And there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. You know, sometimes you live right, you do right, you're kind, you're generous, you wisdom with the things that God has blessed you with, family, but you die young. And there's other people who live lives of really, really hurting others, oppressed others, but they live a long life. Topsy-turvy, out of order, seems to be, doesn't it? And so Solomon is making us aware of that sort of thing in life. And should that cause us to doubt the providence of God? Should it give us pause to think about life is not worth living? No, just understand that sometimes things are just backwards in the way we think at that moment. So it's a good observation of wisdom when we see things that happen to us in this life or happen to others. You know, you can impart that sort of wisdom to others when they say, that's not right. Okay? But you can say, that's always been known from him millenniums ago. It's always that's the way in life and things just happen that way. Now, in the next verse, in verse 16, in this section, things about disorder and things seem out of order. In verse 16, do not be excessively righteous. Do not be overly wise. Why should you ruin yourself? A lot of wisdom in this verses that, you know, can you be excessively righteous and overly wise? He's taken a couple of extremes here. A couple of extremes that we can get ourselves into in the way we think. That if you go to these extremes, say excessively righteous. that produces an arrogance. And you'll see that in life. And in religion, you can see that too, can't you? Excessively righteous. I know we saw that in maybe some asceticism. We see it in 1 Timothy 4:3. And monks do that, okay, where they take themselves out of the world, again, to be them, to give an aura, okay, of a more religious nature, not exposed to the things of the earth, things of everyday life, things under the sun. And they said, why should you ruin yourself? You know, he's making a point that either extreme can ruin one's enjoyment of life. Isn't that the teaching that he does while you're here on earth? Enjoy the things that God has blessed you with. The abilities you have, the things you have, the family you have, the government which you live under. You can enjoy that life under the sun. You can do them things that are right. And so you can ruin yourself by overly obsessing on that. And again, some revenge may be in here too. But remember that this excessively righteous and overly wise. Now, so, can you... Oh, go ahead.
I think I've known cases, if I understand this passage, actual cases that demonstrate this. One, there was a man in Oklahoma when I was there, and he was a diligent Bible student, but he didn't take time with his wife. He didn't want to study, she wanted to talk. And I tried to get to see, you need to take time to talk to your wife, spend time with her. Anyway, they ended up divorced. And the same thing happened with preachers, so it's close to me. It's easy for a preacher, all of his time studying or visiting or that kind of thing, preparing himself and not take care of his family. Same thing, he can ruin himself.
Excellent point. Go ahead, Rocky.
Doug, you made the point through this class that this book is written with a viewpoint under the sun. So when we interpret all these verses, we always got to keep that in mind. If you look at verse 16 and also verse 17, you've got to there yet. It says, do not be excessively wicked. He almost says, well, it's okay to be a little bit wicked. Verse 16, do not be over excessively righteous. Well, I remember what the Lord said. You serve God with all your heart, soul, and mind. We are to be excessively righteous. We do the best we can. Serve God with all our heart, soul, and mind. So, but... when you interpret this under the sun, then that's, now you can make the point that, you know, here on life on earth, you don't want to be exactly righteous with your lifespan, you know, going to be terminated. What does that accomplish versus being also not to be excessively wicked? So I think both these verses, you've got to keep in mind that you interpret it in the book. Because you can find other scriptures that said just the opposite of what these verses are teaching.
Yeah. A couple of good points, one to Steve, one to Rocky. Steve makes the point that you can sacrifice the aim of life to enjoy this life under the sun. And that, as a, from a preacher's point of view, you can just shut out those things that really you, that need to be cultivated if you have a wife, family, to the view in your mind, okay, of the greater good or the greatest good. Teach, preach. But you have other responsibilities that fulfill your life. And again, that's what God wants. And so you can do those things that are extreme and they hurt relationships. And it's an interesting balance. But again, he's warning that with the wisdom that's of Solomon and in dealing with things that seem to be out of balance. And like Rocky mentioned in verse 17, one was excessively righteous. and this is excessively wicked. And you know what? Don't be a fool. Do not be a fool. Fool makes decisions that are sometimes don't fit the circumstances. A fool may take action sometimes that just benefit for the moment, not looking in a longer term situation. And those are things we need to deal with. Now, why should you die before your time? And again, Solomon's not advocating here just a little wickedness, more than he is advocating just a little righteousness. He's saying that that's life under the sun. As we live this life, we can deal with those extremes, and they hurt our purpose of enjoying life here.
Is he saying, Doug, not to pursue a life given to wickedness? Because like fools, they don't listen to wise counsel. So you'd be a fool if you just pursued all the things that could lead to
death. Yeah. A fool is like we talked before about the crackling wood that you throw in a fire. It burns bright, but then it has no longevity to it. And God wants us to have in our thoughts and our mind things of thinking today, tomorrow, the next day. And that deals with the wisdom part, doesn't it? Fool lives for the moment. Lives for the moment. And even the wisdom that he may have had momentarily, he lets it fade away. And that's the things we don't want to do. Because the wisdom that God has written for us benefits us our whole life. Again, we need to concentrate on that. Now, verse 18 under this, let me go back a second. Why should you die before your time? Interesting words. You know, some people who are wicked may die early in life. More likely, generally, people that are wicked get into situations where there is harm involved. Or they run into certain people that are going to take action against them for their wickedness. So sometimes they do die young, just the situation that they're under. But even with that, we need to understand that God will deal with evil in His own time. In His own time. And so that's something to remember for that. Why should you die before your time? Verse 18. It is good that you grasp one thing and also let go of the other. For the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. And we're answering here the question of this disordered life. This life where things seem to be the cart before the horse sort of thing. And he's really saying that it is good that you grasp this. That you grasp this thing. This idea of things may be disordered and you don't let go of the other. So you grasp righteousness and you grasp wisdom. And you grasp something, you want to hold on to it. Because a fool won't, not for long. And for the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. When you fear God, in a sense, you avoid those two extremes, which can lead to ruin of your life. Ruin of the things that are good and right. And so the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. Wise righteousness. Wise righteousness. And if I could say righteousness is a moral attribute too. Those things that are where you value yourself, you value others, you value the place which you're in, you value the possessions you have, and again, knowing that those things are a gift of God. So in this upside down world, the conclusion of that is in verse 18. Okay. Remember, fear and respect God, for those things are wise and righteous. So things in life seem out of order. But we need to deal with it. And through the wisdom of Solomon here, he's told us that. Now, any thoughts? Appreciate the thoughts so far. Really good idea. In this next section, 19 through 22, it says the prevalence of sin. Well, what's prevalence of sin? Well, it's when you see sin that's widespread. Man, there's sin on every corner. Man, turn the TV on, and it's wickedness and sin. It just can't get away from it. Great negativity, misinformation. I go to social media, and there's people just hurting each other with words. In news, what stories do they put on the local news? When it bleeds, it leads. Okay? And those things seem to be negative, negative, negative. And so, all caused by sin and disruption in lives. So we need to think about that. He's making a point. There is a prevalence of sin and how we deal with those. What is wisdom? What does wisdom think about those sort of things? And in verse 19, wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. We're always making a comparison here. When a person who has wisdom strengthens them, it gives them courage to even go against the wisdom of 10 leaders. That's just a figure. But maybe all the rest are in sin. They don't rule properly. They don't act properly. But you know what? Wisdom from God. Wisdom tells you to have courage in that situation. And applied wisdom makes a wise man stronger than 10 rulers. Again, because they're implying that they have sin, even with 10 rulers in person of authority. And does that not give you courage to live your life contrary to what the world says? We've always known that. In the times of the apostles, the courage they had to stand against the Judaizing preachers, the courage they had to stand against their past brethren, Jewish brethren, the courage they had to stand in opposition to the views of their family. Of course, this opposition did not produce anger the way they were talked about, in the sense that they lost self-control. But it was a teaching moment for those in the New Testament who come against all this negativity. Okay? And so we can have courage again, even if we're the only one. You know, you may be on a jury sometime. I've been on juries. And it seems like of the 6 or 12, it depends how many on the size of the jury, you may be the only one that says, no, I think they're innocent. Okay? Or I think they're guilty. If that's the way you think and you reason through the evidence, don't let others say, well, they're this kind of person, and that guy, oh, they don't look right, or this or that. They must be guilty. You weigh the evidence. So you have the courage to stand on your principles. Stand on the evidence you had. Instead of going along with the prevalence of sin. Okay? In that case, a bad judgment. So there's a good points for us to think about on that. And have courage to stand that way. Now, verse 20, there's a little change here, but he's still dealing with the great widespread use of sin. And remember that wisdom says to self-examine yourself. For sin may be prevalent in your life. In your life. So when you stand back sometimes and look at your life and your actions, things you have done, things you're doing, things you may plan to do, is sin widespread in your life? And he uses, again, this comparison here, in verse 20. Indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. What's he saying? It's a truism. No one acts righteously all the time, do they? And if you don't act righteously all the time, there's sin somewhere there. And now, is that widespread sin? Well, in your life? Well, yes. Okay? And so that's a truism that he's brought out to make his readers understand that. Is this maybe a precursor to the Christ? Okay? You can reason that out. But no one's perfect in all their judgments. And sin in one's life can ruin parts of it or all of it. Cause you to be angry, retribution, that sort of thing. Now, verse 21, again dealing with the idea of prevalent sin. Also, Solomon says here, this wise man, he's not moved by widespread rumors or falsehoods. Also, do not take seriously all words which are spoken, lest you hear your servant cursing you. You know, sometimes people will say things behind your back. Call it sin. Instead of confronting you with it or talking to you about those things. And these things are rumors and false accusations. That's the sin. And when this occurs, what do you do about it? Even if it's said by your own servants, in this case, who know you best, or in the political realm, we've seen lately that sometimes when a person is nominated for a position in government, that the family comes out and says a lot of negative things about the individual. Some are very outdated. Some are corruption, okay, of the situation. So these words that here are words that you evaluate. You evaluate, again, how do you react to those situations? How do you react to them? And those are just things in life that occurs. Preachers may be accused of certain sins. You may be accused of certain sins at work, misinterpretation, or someone just wants to get rid of you. But how do we react to those? How do we react? Things that just happen in life. And that's widespread. False rumors, false accusations, those things occur. And again, through the wisdom of Solomon. Wisdom of Solomon, he's telling people this. Verse 22. For you also have realized that you likewise have many times cursed others. Well, there it is. The last verse in this section. You know what? I've done that too. I've done false accusations against people. So the person, the man of wisdom, has got to realize too, okay, that I sin also. And if I realize that I've cursed others, wished harm for others, did falsehood against them, how do I deal with that? First, you need to realize the situation, self-examination, and correct it if you can. Again, try not to repeat it. That's how to live life under the sun, and to live life today too. So these are, again, truisms that Solomon has brought forth in his writings from his period until the end of time. Be aware that life is just full of falsehoods sometimes, whether I commit them or others commit them against me, or I see it committed. So again, self-examination is what we need to think. Any comments? Anyone? Okay. Beginning in verse 23, he's trying to look for an explanation for all these evil times. What's the reason for all these evil times? These misjudgments, these accusations, these rumors that people start that are false. What's the reason? And in these last verses, 23 through 29, he tries to deal with that. And he does. And so, in verse 23 and 24, I read both of those. I tested all this, all these things of evil times, all this with wisdom. And I said, I will be wise. But it was far from me. So here's the wisest man saying, God's wisdom under the sun. I tested it all. And you know what? It's still far from me. If he understood everything in wisdom, he'd have to be deity, wouldn't he? But he's not. And so he's realizing, yes, I don't have all the answers either. It's still far from me. And so as he goes forward in verse 24, what has been is remote and exceedingly mysterious. Who can discover it? Even Solomon admits, there's things in life that I just don't understand, that I don't have the answer to. That there's wisdom out there. It's out there. But I can just do what I can do. And that's a good thing, isn't it? To understand our limitations. And it may promote us to study harder, to, again, self-examine ourselves on things we do and say. But he understands. And you can imagine Solomon, who is blessed by God immensely during his reign. Immensely. Praised by all the countries around him and the people with him. He said, I still don't know the answers, all the answers. And so he continues in verse 25. Once again, this plea. I directed my mind to know, to investigate, and to seek. That's a lot of words together. That's determination. He really wants to know. He's put great thought and study in it. And he had the time to do that. He had the wisdom to do that. So when he puts this to know, to investigate, to seek wisdom and an explanation on why is the evil present? Why is it widespread? Why does it occur in people's lives? Solomon says, why does it occur in my life? To know evil of folly and foolishness of madness. He's experienced a folly the things in life that supposedly give it meaning. Great things of pleasure. Great things of quote-unquote satisfaction. But even with Solomon, this kind of devotion to this cause, you know, drives him to do foolish things from time to time. Drives him to do things that don't really have an explanation, kind of madness about it. So even he's putting himself, the great Solomon, putting himself in a position of inferiority to know the answers. Even though the praise of everyone around him gives him that praise. And again, why does evil occur? Why is there mistreatment? He doesn't have all the answers. He has good directions for us. Self-examination, looking at others, don't be angry. Shun evil companions. And in 26, something's going to change here. He gets a little pointed. And I've discovered more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are changed. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. Women, in his writing here, there's a great allurement to the opposite sex. And he's writing about that. And, you know, they can snare you like a net. They can put you in chains. There's a great ability, tremendous ability, to ensnare, to seduce, to lead one from a calm life to ones of folly and madness. And he's stating that. He's stating that as a man of wisdom, a man who's experienced that, a man who's seen that. And no doubt with his many wives and concubines, and many of those who've been in idolatry, there is, I guess you'd say, an inclination for women in idolatry to make allurements of themselves, okay? In that realm of beauty and enticement. So he's just making an observation here that, but the sinner will be captured by her. Understand at the end of that, if you don't understand things, you're going to be a sinner. And if you're a wise man, you won't be captured. And if you're a fool, you are captured. So just be aware of that, and we'll continue. Let me make sure if I can read this. We're running out of time. Let's do that next time. 27, 28, then we'll go into chapter 8. Appreciate your comments. Thank you very, very much.